Hi, everyone, and welcome. I'm Claire Zammit, founder of Feminine Power and co-founder of Evolving Wisdom. And I'm excited to have the opportunity to be here with you today for this special event on the three keys to making the shift with food in 2017, a preview of Janine Roth's upcoming workshop in the San Francisco Bay Area in March on ending obsession, how to make lifelong peace with food. Janine is a pioneer. She was the first to link compulsive eating and perpetual dieting with personal and spiritual issues that go far beyond food, weight, and body image. She believes that what we eat and the way that we live and our relationship to food, money, and love is an exact reflection of our deepest health beliefs about ourselves and the amount of joy, abundance, pain, scarcity that we believe that we're allowed or not allowed to have in our lives. In having had the opportunity to get to know her personally over the last couple of years, what I most want to share with you is that teachers in this world and authors and writers, we can only take people as far as we've gone on our journey and no further. And this is really what distinguishes Janine's work and who she is as a person and a teacher above and beyond so many other things that are out there. She's first and foremost a student and a lifelong learner. Her capacity for inquiry, for distinction, for reflection, for seeing her own patterns is unparalleled. And she brings her work together with such an exquisite artistry that not only does it make sense to mind, but it activates a deeper possibility of awakening on all levels, including the deepest level of our soul. So Janine, I couldn't imagine there being anyone in the world that I would be more on the edge of my seat to hear from about the three keys to making this lifelong shift with food.
Oh, thank you, Claire. What a beautiful introduction. Pleased and honored to be here with you.
Well, thank you. And you know, it's also a wonderful time because it's the beginning of the new year. You know, 70% of Americans are overweight or obese or suffer or struggle. The beginning of the year, you know, and this is like, you know, across the spectrum of you know, professions or what we do, and not to mention all of the issues that we have around disordered eating as women and our relationship with our bodies. And I know the beginning of a new year, it's a time that we're still setting resolutions. We're wanting to make changes. We're wanting to lose weight. We're wanting to, you know, kind of step into our radiance or, kind of be able to show up in new ways. And, you know, yet 90 to 95% of us who go on a diet or try to lose weight, we end up gaining it back. So I know this is the great mystery you have been, you know, solving for the last 30 years. So I just want to invite you to share with us just the bigger picture, like what's going on here? You know, what are our biggest struggles? And, you know, what's the experience that's beneath the surface, you know, around these issues, especially for women?
Yeah, I think it's really important to name what's going on, and thank you for asking that question. First, what comes up for so many people is a general dislike verging to hatred of their thighs, their arms, their bellies. They look at their bodies in disgust. There's an ongoing loop of judgment and shame that happens sort of through the days. Every time we pass by a mirror, and that is deeply affecting to all of us, to have that kind of bullying, I'll call it, that voice in our heads that tells us we're not good enough, we're not thin enough, look at this, it's repulsive. I mean, it goes from not good enough to repulsive. The other way that this manifests is the focus on food, what we should eat, what we shouldn't eat, what we just ate, that we shouldn't have eaten, what we really want to eat, but we really can't eat, and that sense of crouching down and constellating on food itself, becoming obsessed with it, how that manifests in most all of us is that we go on one diet after another. We keep on feeling like the reason this particular diet didn't work is because something was wrong with us. That we lack the willpower, that we lack the grit, that it wasn't the right diet, that we needed another kind of diet that was less in fat or more in fat or less in carbohydrates or more in carbohydrates, not so much sugar, more sugar. Now, obviously what we put into our mouths, what we eat really does affect our bodies and it really does matter. But before all that or simultaneous with that is our whole relationship with our bodies and food. You know, sometimes I say to people, if every year you went to a doctor and you said, I'm going to go on a diet, and the doctor said to you, or I need a cure for this particular ailment that I have, and the doctor said, okay, well, here's the cure, but really there's only about a 2% chance that it's going to work and that's ever going to work, would you still do it year after year after year after year? That goes back to that statistic you mentioned. All of us keep doing it, and at the same time, we know it doesn't really work, but we don't know what else to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's it costing us? You know, this unresolved, you know, I want to just speak to that, because I think somehow if we could harness the the inverted energy that we spend as women on this and you know, kind of activate ourselves as change agents or even manifest our deepest desires or the things that we want to create in our lives. You know, this kind of negative spiral that's at the root that you're speaking of, what does it cost us in our lives to live with this unresolved?
Oh, I mean, another way of asking that question is that what doesn't it cost us? It costs our life energy. It zaps it. It saps it. It drains us. Our creative energy is drained through the funnel of this. The energy that we have to bring to our children, our spouses, our work, whatever that work is taken up by being obsessed and by thinking that, well, if only I get this together or when I get this together, then I'll have more energy to do that with. And so we keep on postponing our lives, our vitality, our radiance, thinking that this is the year, this is the time I'll get this together, and then we don't, and then we feel like failures, and then it spirals down. We're not present in our bodies because we're always thinking about the fact that we have the wrong bodies. If only we had a thinner body, we could be okay. And we just can't show up. You know, I wrote this piece that's coming out in my new book, which will be out probably next year sometime. And it's called If I Were Gloria Steinem. And it's about the fact that what isn't being addressed in so much of our culture is how women's energy is tied up with this relationship with food. And so asking us to be powerful, to be out there, to achieve, to change the world while realizing that 3/4, if not more, of our energy is tied up in our relationship with food would be like asking somebody whose feet are bound to run a marathon. Mm. That's what it's like.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just touching into the depth of that, and you know, it's kind of just feeling into it as you were speaking, and what you were saying about presence. It's like how disconnected we get, how dissociated we get, and you know, I teach and coach, mentor women around feminine power and being connected to ourselves. It's actually the source of our creative power.
Yeah.
Speaking to. And, you know, the thing that I just felt as you were saying that for the first time ever was about presence. It's like we can't actually experience love, experience being alive, experience kind of being in the world without fully being in our bodies.
Yes, and that's
so
really important.
Right, and so it's like, you know, kind of like where were we for the last 10 years, 20,
yes.
30
right.
years, right?
Right. Yes, it's true. And we have, and this isn't exactly an answer to that question, but we have I would go so far as to say that we treat ourselves with such lack of respect in terms of these bodies, these particular arms and legs and feet, this chest, this heart, this body that has schlepped us throughout our entire life, carried us, reached for us, done everything for us, and yet there's a constant undermining of it through this shame or judgment or bullying that we do on a day-to-day level. And it makes it impossible. Talk about feminine power. It makes it impossible to be powerful if the true source of power is authenticity and standing in your own two shoes.
Yeah.
And you're not claiming the feet, the legs, the arms that stand in those shoes. You don't respect it, treat it with tenderness or kindness. It's impossible to feel true and authentic power.
Mm. So we think the problem is calories in, calories out.
Yes,
if only
right.
I could like go on a plan, and if only I could have willpower. And I hear you saying it's not that it's not that, but there is something deeper going on that's the root cause of this struggle. Can you say more about what it is?
Yes. And thank you for reiterating that. It's not that what we eat makes no difference at all. Of course it does. It affects our energy. It affects how alive or not alive we feel. But if you keep going on diets to lose weight, then you keep giving up your power to that diet. You don't end up trusting yourself. There isn't a sense that you know that you've got the power to make this shift. It's always the good diet, which is, you know, Gloria Steinem referred to this in the speech that she gave at the Washington Women's March about the good daddy. And, you know, I refer to this as the good daddy diet, that we keep on relying on some external power out there that knows, even though we know. So I think part of the problem here is that we don't trust ourselves, that we're unwilling to look deeply and ask ourselves what's actually going on. And this gets down to those three things that I've noticed every woman who has truly made the shift to making peace with food, to having an alive, vital, non-suffering relationship with food has made. They first of all have gotten in touch with their bodies. So the real problem, or one of the real problems, which is also one of the three keys, so a problem that's related to the key, the real problem is that we disown our bodies. And so a shift to make there a key to be noted there is reclaiming that connection with your body. What does that mean? That means breathing. That means noticing that your feet are on the floor. I mean, on the simplest level here, right now, everybody can do. You notice your feet is on the floor, the point of contact your arms are making with your legs or with the sofa or with the chairs. You notice what your chest feels like. You notice if there's heat or coolness or vibration or pulsing. You notice that. What I've noticed with the people that I've worked with, and I'm thinking about one person in particular who said to me when I started this work with her, "But my body is so uninteresting. But what's most interesting about me is my mind and how quick it is." This is a Harvard graduate. This is also a PhD in business management, a very high-powered position, and felt like that me saying to her, reclaim her body, was like, huh? What? This? I don't want to. The whole reason I turn to food is to get out of this thing that I'm lugging around with me. But it's actually turning around and realizing this is where it begins. This is where you do stand in your own two shoes. And she is doing that now, much to her resistance at the beginning, and finding this sense of aliveness that she has never felt before. Because the life force manifests through your body. That's where it is.
Right.
It's right here.
Wow.
Yeah, it is a wow. And it's the most obvious thing. It's the closest thing to you. Your body is the piece of the universe you've been given. Why not occupy it?
Yeah.
And it's not hard. It's really easy.
And I know that these are, you know, you start with some of these kinds of practices at the retreat that you're going to be going into for people to get an experience of a new way of being in their bodies.
Yes. It's, I think when people have a direct experience of what it's like to be in their bodies, and a lot of people avoid it because they think it's going to be so painful. But actually, just this breath, these senses, what do you hear, what do you see? I mean, on the simplest possible level, being in your body is accessible to you now. And the thing is, most of us walk through ghosts. Walk through life as ghosts, disembodied ghosts, just moving along, not really remembering how we got from one side of the room to the other side of the room, because we were so in our minds. So this is just about showing up where you are now and noticing the goodness of that, really noticing the benevolence of that.
So this is the first key that you've seen. I mean, I just to underscore for everyone, what you're sharing are the key shifts that you've seen everyone who has made a permanent and lasting shift in their relationship with food in their bodies that has enabled them to be free of the suffering that comes from all of the things we've been speaking about.
Right.
What's the second key?
The second key is to learn how to be in touch with, in connection with, and most of all, be kind to your feelings, the different states that come up. I think what happens with people is that when they feel something coming up, particularly a difficult feeling, we want to push it away. We just want it to go away. No, I don't want to feel that. No, if I feel that, it will be too overwhelming. But what often happens is that if we just allow ourselves any old feeling, and this includes happiness, because believe it or not, most people are threatened by happiness as well. We say we want to be happy, but when we actually let ourselves feel happy, there's something threatening about it. What if they don't love me if I'm happy? What if I can't be part of what I call the suffering club when I'm happy? What if actually my relationships are based on sharing of wounds and not sharing of happiness? So I'm including happiness in this range of learning how to be connected and kind towards yourself, how to allow what you're feeling to be there. And this includes feelings that might be difficult. You know, the way that I work with my students on this is I say to them, the part of you that wants to lose weight is an adult, is altogether, is high functioning, you know, just really knows what she wants. That is, I want to lose weight. I realize I'm over my natural weight. I'd like to lose weight. That's clear. The part of ourselves that actually turns to food, not so clear. That might be a younger part. That might be a more contracted part. That might be a wounded part. There's nothing scary about that. Sometimes I'll ask my students to just give that part a name. Not always, but sometimes. And they learn how to, well, in fact, one student I'm thinking about right now named that part of herself, Left Alone Annie. So every time somebody would leave or walk out the door or a friend would say something that hurt her feelings, this part would come up, the part of her that felt like she was left alone as a kid. Not only was she left alone as a kid, she would always be left alone, and she was destined to die miserable, fat, and alone, eating cat food out of tins. That's what her story was.
Wow.
And so that would come up whenever she felt hurt or rejected. And let's face it, not everybody says the kindest things, or, you know, we're not always greeted with rousing applause and kindness. Sometimes a friend, even a friend, this is not to even mention a boss or a colleague or a child or a spouse, says something to us that's not exactly positive, and we go into some kind of contraction or old loop or tape of beliefs. It's always going to be like this. I'm not lovable. They don't love me. I'm going to die old and alone. My mother was right. My father was right. My first husband was right. My first partner was right. We go into this whole set of beliefs that we don't question. And it's from that little loop we turn to food because we think it's going to be comforting. What I teach students to do, as with Left Alone Annie, what she does now, which is extraordinary, is that every time that part of her comes up, she feels hurt or rejected or abandoned, she is able to turn to herself and say, oh, sweetheart, I'm so sorry that you feel like this. Or, you know, for those people who are allergic to that kind of inner dynamic, I feel hurt. Let me show myself some kindness and tenderness. That is the most intuitive thing. I mean, you think when you stub your toe, instead of saying, oh, shit, you'd say, oh, honey, I'm so sorry you hurt yourself. But most of us say, oh, shit. And that's how we treat ourselves. And with utter lack of kindness, with harshness, with shame. I can't believe you're feeling this again. When are you going to learn not to feel this? So the second key is to learn to scoop ourselves up, learn to scoop up these difficult feelings, and have it be an automatic action.
And I know at the workshop, you're going to be going into this more deeply as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's crucial.
And kinds of, like, learning how to do that. Because I kind of often think it's very unhelpful when people say, well, you have to learn how to love yourself first. It's like, well, how specifically do you do that? And I think how we talk to ourselves, how we listen to ourselves, how we relate to ourselves, that relationship that we have with ourselves, it expands or contracts our power. And I know the power of the kinds of processes that you do, that at a live event or a workshop, you can have an experience that something kind of clicks in and you get into a new way of relating to yourself that you can then sustain and take and carry forward in your life. So that's the third key. I'm sorry, the second key to making the lifelong shift that everyone that you've seen that you've worked with has made. What's the third key?
You know, I just want to say one more thing about that.
Sure.
Claire, and the direct experience. I, too, can't stand it when somebody says to me, well, you just need to learn to love yourself. Well, you just need to wake up. Wow.
It's so unhelpful.
I just hate it.
It's so unhelpful.
Very mean parts of me come up when I hear this, and I feel like saying, you go do it, you know, and I'll show you what loving yourself means. I mean, really, that's how allergic I am to being told that. So I think direct experiences of, first of all, naming, most people are unconscious of the way they talk to themselves, truly. They're not conscious of what's going on. That's one of the first things we do at the workshop. Name, make it conscious, and then people are staggered when they hear, oh, my God, that's the music that's been playing in the background of my life every single day. And then we work on specific ways that they can be kind to themselves. So, yes, the direct experience is very important, and naming what's been unconscious is really crucial here.
Well, and I know this is a different thing to affirmations, where you're kind of just, trying
that's
to
That's the other thing I'm allergic to.
I know, right? as opposed to like a direct engagement and like an authentic and real relationship.
Yes.
Where there's respect, where there's presence, where there's care, where, and that is the foundation for all of the other relationships in our life.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Right. I think there's, as I said, I'm allergic to affirmations, mostly because I've tried them, I did try them years ago when they first started becoming the rage, and I tried them and they never worked, truly. They never worked for me. And so I believe it's not about, trajecting yourself somewhere that you're not, But understanding where you are, naming that, and then seeing what's keeping you from being where you know you can be, where you've gotten the glimmer, the taste, the possibility of where you know you can be, and then developing certain direct experiences that you can have that take you there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and that's powerful when you have, I mean, and that's the power of live in-person work as well.
Yeah.
When you're together and you're in a group and you have that kind of mentoring and guidance.
Yes.
It's like you can just drop in and access something that, you know, then becomes a whole new way of being with yourself.
Yeah, it's true. Nothing really takes the place of the in-personness, mm-hmm. of what can happen, of the magic that can happen in a group. I keep reminding myself over and over and over of that in this digital age where I, too, am prone to, nah, I don't really want to go. I think I'll just see if it comes on YouTube, you know, a couple days later. I think I'll just stay in my pajamas, you know, and not really go. And then when I go, I am aware once again of the power,
yeah.
of being in a group. It's exponential than just sitting there alone, because you can feel the presence of other people.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel the shift that's happening in them. Then you know it's possible in you. There's no replacing that.
Well, and how we learn too is by patterning and modeling.
Yes.
You know, and like this is something you've gone through from, you know, having probably a more tortured and challenged start point than pretty much anybody in terms of like really the transformation that's possible. But no, this is how we learn. We like look up, we pattern.
Yeah.
You know, so to actually see healthy models and healthy patterns, the tools to see ourselves, see our own stories and struggles.
Yeah.
And the stories of other people, we realize,
yes.
it's not just us. Like,
right.
This is
very
part of the
important.
Human condition that we're struggling with, and there is a pathway out. So, key number three, we're on
yes.
the edge of our seat.
Key number three is to name, and this is also something we work on at the workshop, because it's not always apparent, the deeper and positive reason that we've been keeping the weight on. Now, I know that when people first hear this from me, they say, no, there's no positive reason. This is, I just want it to go. That, you know, forget it. I don't believe it. I hate you, Janine, for saying this. I mean, I have had people, you know, be quite vociferous with me about that and look at me with a lot of cynicism and doubt. But here's what I know. If there wasn't a positive reason let's put it this way, if there wasn't a way that your weight, whether it be 5 pounds, 20 pounds, 50 pounds, is serving you, is helping you, is speaking for you, then it wouldn't be on your body. And I know this both from myself. This was one of the first breakthroughs I ever had. I was 60 pounds over my natural weight where I am now when I started this work. And I had spent 17 years shaming and torturing and depriving myself and gaining and losing over 1,000 pounds during that time. And as you said, feeling like the craziest person alive about food. I wanted to kill myself. It was that bad. I just didn't feel like I could live another day with that kind of torture. And on the verge of killing myself, I realized this key, and that was that my weight must have been, or must be, because in then it was, must be serving a purpose, that there must be a way I was using it to speak for me. And I became curious. I gave myself a week or two and said, okay, let's see if you cannot go on a diet and if you can really find out what's happening with this weight, what are the reasons. And if you want to kill yourself after 2 weeks, okay, fine. Because that's how on the verge I was. I really was on the verge. And what I did then was I did a sort of dialogue with myself, and I do a similar dialogue or version of that, not quite a dialogue, in the workshop, asking my weight or getting in touch with how was my weight actually speaking for me. And what I realized then was that every time I was thin or thinner, I would throw myself at unavailable men who didn't want me, didn't love me, and never would. And it would became my mission in life to convince them that I was worthy and lovable, or really to convince myself I was worthy and lovable by convincing somebody who would never love me to love me. It was a useless task, and believe me, I went through a lot of men like that. But that's how I was using my creative energy, which goes back to what we were saying at the beginning. When I realized that how my weight was functioning for me then was that I felt so unattractive that I wasn't throwing myself at every unavailable madman who, you know, madman who came across my path and therefore had much more of my energy. This was the positive part, which I didn't understand at the beginning, had much more energy to devote to my work. It was then, in that moment when I realized that, that number one, I started writing my first book because suddenly I realized, oh my God, this weight has actually served a positive purpose in my life. And what do I actually really want to do now? And I knew I wanted to write. And also, I started losing weight because I realized that I was giving my weight my power. The weight doesn't speak for you, really. I mean, you know, your body doesn't have a voice. It's not actually doesn't have a language. It doesn't go around speaking to other people. Anything you think your body is saying for you, you are giving it power to say for you. So you're basically disowning your power and giving it to your body, to your weight, to the size of your body. And I realized it was my power. And I could take it back. And if I didn't want to say no, I mean, if I wanted to say no to men, if I didn't want to be in a relationship for a couple of years and I wasn't for a couple of years then that was up to me. That wasn't up to my weight. I didn't have to, you know, eat compulsively and be obsessed with food in order to do what I really wanted to do. I could do that myself. So that was the biggest awakening that I had. I mean, aside from realizing that no diet I had ever been on had ever worked in the long run and I wasn't ever going to do it again, this part was huge for me. And it is for the people I work with as well. They realize, for instance, that when they're fat, they don't feel sexy or they they're not worried that men are going to come on to them or unasked for attention is going to happen and makes them uncomfortable. Some of them have been sexually abused, but the large part of them who haven't still find that they're using their weight, for instance, to say no, go away, I want to be left alone. You know, instead of one person said she found that the only time she could have time alone because she had three kids was when she was eating. That became her time alone. Mm-hmm. And what she realized was she could go lock herself in the bathroom for a couple of minutes and not have to eat in order to do that. So it's those kinds of things that can happen.
Wow. Well, and these are, you know, this is kind of the deepest level of the transformation. Well, I mean, it all works together, but it's like this is kind of a level it's very hard to get to by yourself.
Yes, it is.
You know, kind of being in dialogue, being stimulated, exercises, practice, being able to speak, being able to share, like this is where the kind of container and the value of, I think, you know, coming together at a live workshop is so critical. And being able to uncover the deepest level of these kinds of things. And you see the power of those shifts once you kind of get that and you see that, the realizations that you're naming, you can make profoundly different choices. And
you
bring those three things together. And then I can, you know, what would naturally begin to happen, I imagine, is you're listening to yourself, you're making better choices. And you're finding a way to from being in your body, you're connected to your true hunger as opposed to false cravings. You're able to feel and be with feelings in new ways that you might have been eating over in the past. You're able to let go and shift the very good reason that that's been working for you. And it's amazing how time also works out. I mean, luckily, you didn't get together with any of those other men, and you met your husband, right? Who is
right.
An extraordinary partner to you after that. So I'd love to ask you to share, like, what do you, you know, so the women who, you know, I mean, you've been through this process yourself, made the shift with these three keys. You've coached and mentored hundreds of thousands of women. What's the kind of transformation that begins to happen for women who make the shift with these keys?
Yes. I was actually just listening last night. We had recorded some people at our last retreat about the shifts that they've made. So I was just last night listening to what they were saying. One woman said that she felt more alive than she had ever felt in her entire life. And from that place, she was able to quit a job that she felt undervalued and underused in.
Wow.
And find a work, a kind of work, a job that she loved. And that was major for her. Another woman said that she was able to be there for her children in a way, particularly her daughters. She realized that with her daughter, she was passing on the legacy of body loathing that her mother had unwittingly passed on to her, and she was able to turn that around, which is major because, of course, oh, that's how this issue gets transferred from mother to daughter to daughter to daughter to daughter. It just keeps on going on through the generations.
Wow.
Another woman said that in occupying her body and in realizing the deeper reasons that she was holding on to the weight, she was actually able to lose 30 pounds and keep it off without dieting for the first time in her many, many years of dieting, and that was extraordinary for her. She had started to move much more. She felt like this body that she was wearing her insides on her outside and felt thrilled about that. And I think that's what many people don't feel. They feel like there's a disconnect between who they really know they are and what their bodies actually look like. So wearing your inside, so to speak, and I'm not talking about your most vulnerable, preciously held, close to you feelings or secrets. I'm not talking about that kind of vulnerability, but the possibility of you is what she said. That the possibility of me is now realized not only in the size of my body, but also in the size of my life.
Wow. Wow, that's
yes.
Deep and that's powerful.
Yes, yes, it is. It is. It's such beautiful work. It's such beautiful work. And I just feel so honored and privileged to be doing this work because of witnessing these stunning transformations that I keep seeing unfold.
So, Janine, you are such a pioneer, and I just feel so incredibly grateful for the depth of your practice. And, I mean, this was something that you just figured out for yourself. And the generosity and deep care and service with which you've shared this for other women,
mm-hmm.
It's such a tremendous opportunity, I know, for people to be with you, to live in person, and to be able to experience and apply what we've been speaking about today with these three keys. It's an opportunity not just to lose weight, but to make a lifelong shift in your relationship with your food and your body. And, you know, discover and develop the new capabilities that enable a new way of being that will open a doorway to lasting change. So if any of this has resonated with you listening and you feel this is something you have struggled with, you're excited about the idea of what could become possible for you to make this year the year you make the shift forever in your relationship with food and your body. I want to encourage you to jump in your car or jump on a plane or jump on a train and get to Janine's workshop that's going to be live in the Bay Area near the San Francisco airport. It's Friday, March 17th, and Saturday, so it's Friday evening, March 17th, and it's Saturday, the March 18th, and it's in Redwood City, right near the San Francisco airport, so very easy to get to if you have to fly in for it, or drive. There's lots of ways to get there through the Bay Area. And I want to invite you just to share about the workshop and what people can expect to experience at the event. It's called Ending Obsession, Make Lifelong Peace with Food. You can click on the link right now that's below the player that's going to take you to the retreat page, or something, the workshop page, with all of the information about it. But I'd love to invite you, Janine, just to share about the opportunity to be with you and a group of women live in person to go through this process and apply these three keys.
Yes. I think the wonderful thing about coming to this event, to a live event, is that it helps you, first of all, realize you're not alone. That's so crucial. You know, I often say at every workshop, there are actually three workshops going on. There's a workshop somebody would see, somebody else would see if they walked in the door. There are people sitting in chairs, and there's somebody up on a podium. There's that workshop. Then there's the workshop that's happening in your own process between you and you. And the third workshop is that happens between you and the other people in the room. And that, I think, all of those three things are important, of course. But the second and third ones in particular, and I'll focus on the third one right now, to know you're not alone and to be able to connect with and hear from other people, there's an instant sense of belonging, of community, of recognition, and of possibility that happens. Also what happens, and this is why it's good to come to an event like this, the sort of loops that you're already going around in, those are all conscious loops. We were talking about some of them before, like the reasons why we keep the weight on. If you ask yourself consciously why you do that, if you do that consciously, you probably won't be able to go as deep and as thoroughly as you'll be able to go in a group and also with me on this particular subject, because I know and have heard and have worked deeply with myself and other people on those reasons. And you can't be conscious of what you're not conscious about. It just is impossible. And what a workshop does is bring up what you're not aware of into the light so that you can actually name it and work on it. On those keys, on the three keys that we've talked about. We'll be doing particular exercises. We'll do an eating exercise together. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's about 15 minutes long, and it gives everybody a sense. It's huge amount of fun, but so enlightening because it gives every person a sense of what their relationship with food actually is. When you have a couple of pieces of food in front of you and you're being asked to taste it, smell it, look at it, what's it like to have it in your mouth? People are so amazed at seeing how they usually eat versus what it's like to pay attention to the food. One man said to me, I've eaten, and this is about a particular piece of food we're eating, I've eaten bags and bags of these, but I've never eaten just one of these. And it's that kind of, oh my God, what does a raisin mean to me? It means raisinettes. It means chocolate chip cookies with raisins in them. But have I ever actually tasted this? So your whole relationship with tasting, with food, And with enough, what's enough food? What does sufficiency feel like? What are the hunger signals your body gives you? What are the signals your body gives you with having enough? We work on that level as well. And so you'll learn that in the workshop, as well as learning what it's like to sense into your body, to actually feel what it's like to have a body, to have your body, and to see what it's like to treat yourself with kindness in this body.
Mm, beautiful. And one thing that just came up that I wanted to ask you, you know, I think this area, particularly when we kind of come into a live and in-person workshop event with other people, you know, I know this area can hold a lot of shame for people. And I know that the environment that you create is one where people feel incredibly safe and unselfconscious.
Yeah.
And that your workshops are full of really smart, successful, creative, talented people. This is not like, you know, you're a low-functioning person if you just have this problem. Like, you know, can you speak to that just in terms of, like, you know, who do you find attends and what's the environment and how, because it's such a tender area, how, you know, do we get off feeling unselfconscious and really being able to participate and transform?
Yes, right. I'm glad you asked that question, Claire. Thank you. I feel like let's just start from the outside and work in, that the environment, and I feel this very strongly, about also the places where I teach my retreats and also the places I hold my workshops, that the environment itself, how you feel as soon as you walk into it, what it looks like, how it's set up, if it's nourishing, if it's beautiful, the environment itself needs to be a reflection of what's being taught. So we set up the environment in a very particular way, so that the moment you walk in, you'll feel like you can relax. Beauty itself is very important to me. Flowers, a kind of feel, an energetic sense of, oh, I can relax here. That's the first thing. Part of the reason we're having this at the Sofitel, I think it's still called the Sofitel. They were changing names for a while, but I think they kept it the same, is because it's a beautiful environment, this particular room. So I'm very particular about that. Also, at the workshop, there will be anywhere from 8 to 10 to 12 support people who have been doing this work with me for probably, anywhere from 5 to 8 years. As they've lost weight and their bodies have transformed and their lives have transformed, they would also like to be there supporting other people. So they're available at any moment for support, to talk to be asked about a particular process that we do. So there's sort of endless support there for everybody who's there. The other part, my part of this is that I feel like it's really important for me immediately to create a safe environment in terms of what I say, confidentiality, how people talk to themselves and to other people in the environment of the workshop, so that there's not exactly what we're working with, which is harshness and unkindness going on at any moment in the workshop environment itself. And people have told me again and again that they have never felt as safe in a workshop or a retreat environment as they have in the environment in which I teach. So that is so important to me because of the self-loathing and the shame that I walked around with for so many years, and I'm so aware of that, that I address that almost instantly within the first moments of the workshop in terms of the environment and the relaxation. And who comes are high-functioning people. Now, it could be a high-functioning stay-at-home mom, actress, television personality, CEO, lawyers, doctors, salespeople. There's just a whole range of people that come. People fly in from all over the world to come to a night and a day workshop, some from Australia, England, Spain, New Zealand, South America, as well as many people from across the country. So there's a wide variety of people from different places who come.
Beautiful. And I know that this is the last time that you're going to be offering this workshop for quite some time.
Yes.
So I want to encourage everyone listening, if you are feeling called to participate, to just jump in and take the opportunity to be with Janine live March 17th in the evening, Saturday, March 18th, 2017. You can find out all the details and register just by clicking the link below the audio player. It's going to take you to Janine's website with all of the details about joining in. And Janine, thank you so much for sharing this with us today and shining the light on your work and the opportunity to participate in this. I just think, what an invitation to make this the year that you finally make peace with your with food, with your body, get your natural weight, and get into a whole new experience of aliveness, of presence, of love, of enjoying the beauty, the magic, and the experience of being alive. So any final words to anyone who is considering joining in or making the shift this year?
The thing that I want to say is it's really possible. You really do have the power to do this no matter how many times you've tried and you've, quote, failed. And I think that's what discourages people from coming often is, oh, I've already tried this. Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going to do something else. None of the other things worked. What makes me think this is going to work if none of the other things worked? But what I want to say is I know this works because, number one, I've done this. And I, as we mentioned during this talk, Claire, I was insane around food. And if I really feel like if one person can do this, anybody can do this. If you have the right support, which is what this workshop offers, it offers an immense amount of support. So don't let the fact that you've tried other things and they haven't worked or haven't worked as well as you'd hope they would, keep you from coming. This is an absolutely possible thing to do. And once you do it, you will never, ever again be able to be talked into believing that everything is impossible, that what you feel and sense and know is possible for you, your own inherent vitality, radiance, and power cannot actually be manifested in this very life. It can. It should. It's your birthright. Take a chance on yourself. Take the leap. It will be so well worth it.
Thank you so much, Janine. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Find out more and register for the workshop. Just click on the link below the audio. Much love. Many blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. If you loved your time with Janine on this call, you'll truly love spending 2 days with her at her upcoming intensive workshop, March 17th and 18th. Don't miss this. This is Janine's only West Coast workshop in 2017, and it's a spectacular event. You can find information and secure registration online at JanineRoth.com. That's JanineRoth.com. Want to register by phone? Call our retreat manager, Judy, at 703-401-0871. 703-401-0871. take the leap and join Janine in March for this fabulous intensive weekend. It's going to be spectacular, and you will not regret it. Thank you again for joining us tonight.